art and the artists who make it reflect the best of their times and the worst. These days, the lines between life and art can be blurry, and they seem to be getting blurrier in the age of Donald Trump, President Donald Trump. Kelly Werman is a contemporary artist and a guest curator at Southern Oregon University's Schneider Museum of Art. She curated a faculty show opening this evening, and she's here with us now. Hi, Kelly. Let's get Kelly potted up here on her microphone. Hi, Kelly. All right. Much of your work is abstract. Do politics influence what you do in the studio?
Influence my work.
Okay. I'm so sorry, Kelly. As I said, we're welcoming our new student assistant. And due to an outbreak of the flu here at JPR, we are kind of throwing the reins at him. Kelly Werman, you're a curator, and your work is abstract. I just ask you how politics influence, and maybe you could start again for us.
Hi. No problem. Politics don't necessarily affect my work, per se, in the studio. I do feel like a lot of artists feel a responsibility to react to what's happening right now politically, but and I participate in the protests and the marches, and I plan on organizing with a lot of artists when I get back home, but it doesn't necessarily affect my abstract paintings. Per se.
And when you say you feel a responsibility as an artist, could you talk about that more? I mean, a lot of us, we think of art as something that's reflecting beauty. In what way is there a social responsibility in the art that you either make or that you think is important?
I mean, I think a lot of people are reacting to the current political climate in different ways, and I think that is creeping into a lot of artists' work, and a lot of work, you know, if you look back at history, reflects political times. But I mean, I think a lot of artists are just really, I mean, a lot of people in general are really upset by what's happening politically, at least in New York City, I know, and you can see by the women's marches pretty much nationally, globally, there's millions of people that feel a responsibility. So I don't want to just say artists feel this responsibility to react and to protest or march or organize. But I do know that within my sort of artist community that people are very actively organizing and, you know, creating fundraisers and things like that, donating works to shows that, you know, give donations to Planned Parenthood, et cetera. So there is that sort of involvement with art directly. And
do you come up with, or do you come across artists who are on the other side of the political spectrum very often? I mean, do you see conservative, highly conservative contemporary artists, or do you look for their work?
No, I don't necessarily look for their work. And honestly, I don't... I'm trying to think of anyone that I might know that is highly conservative. And I can't think of anyone off the top of my head who I feel like are very big, either Trump supporters or even conservative in general.
Mm-hmm. Because you make art, but you also select which art goes into shows, such as one opening tonight at the Southern Oregon University. And I asked you about politics in the work that you make. What about the work that you curate?
Well, the show tonight isn't politically driven. Although I have had conversations with a lot of the artists involved, and they all seem politically minded, but or politically conscious anyway. I am thinking about, you know, when I was talking about responsibility as an artist, I do feel that there's a responsibility as a curator as well to sort of think about how we deal with what's happening politically sort of in the public realm and creating conversations around what's happening. So I am actually thinking about putting together an exhibition maybe in the spring in reaction to the election. I think that you're going to see more and more exhibitions actually responding to this. I mean, there's already been nasty woman shows throughout the country.
Tell us about that. What would a nasty woman show include? That's, of course, a reference to Donald Trump.
Yes, absolutely.
Interrupting Hillary Clinton during a debate and calling her a nasty woman.
Of course, yeah. So I think, well, the nasty woman shows in fact, some friends back in Brooklyn, they sort of put together an exhibition that is to benefit Planned Parenthood. And I think they had maybe 750 people submit, and there were tons of, you know, people at the show. And I think they raised like $50,000 for Planned Parenthood. Obviously, you know, the threat to women's reproductive rights are very they're in the forefront of everyone's minds. And so the Nasty Woman show was basically a reaction to that. And there were hundreds of women throughout the nation that put together secondary, you know, locations for the show. I think it started with the Brooklyn show, and then, you know, that sort of got filled up and became this huge thing. And then other venues around the country were like, well, we want to do that too, and ended up putting on their own Nasty Woman shows with female artists reacting to the current election and everything that's happening. It's hard to keep up these days.
So you work out of New York, and you studied in London recently. What got you to Southern Oregon?
Well, Scott Malburn, the director of the museum, I had known him back in New York. He's a great painter, and he was at Pratt. I went to Pratt for my MFA, mm-hmm. and I actually didn't know him that well at Pratt, and I became a fan of his work. And he brought some students by a show. I guess they were on a field trip to New York, a show at Ite Gallery in Tribeca that I had done called Land After Time. And so he brought his class there, and we talked about the work, and we sort of talked about being an artist in New York and had some life conversations. And I think he liked the show and eventually gave me a phone call over the summer asking if I would be interested in curating the exhibition tonight. And of course, was like, yes, absolutely.
And that exhibition is at the Schneider Museum of Art. It's a faculty exhibition called Shapes of Curiosity. It opens at 5 p.m. tonight, and lots of details available on our website. If you're just joining us, our guest is the curator of that show. Her name is Kelly Warman. She's a contemporary artist herself, and you're welcome to join the discussion with her if you have questions about what it's like to be a contemporary artist today and how you make sense of politics, how you go about selecting a show, especially being out of the region. I know I have a lot of questions for Kelly. We'd love to have yours as well. 800-838-3760 or email us jx@jeffnet.org. You're an artist and a curator. How do you approach doing both roles?
I think that they naturally inform one another. My painting practice, so I'm primarily a painter. My painting practice, I think, is slightly more intuitive. My curatorial practice is much more steeped in writing and research and you know, really working through an idea much more thoroughly, I think.
Could you give us a for instance?
Well, for instance, I guess I'll go back to the Ite show that I was just talking about that Scott had visited. You know, that show was sort of based around the idea of this kind of post-apocalyptic you know, like what would be left behind if we were to travel in the future, I don't know, like hundreds of years, and what would our culture sort of have left behind? And
assuming our culture doesn't exist anymore in
100 years? Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like a weird duality, because when you walk into the show, it's very bright and happy and tons of neon and bright sculptures and bright paintings, and it feels very light. And then there's this sort of like, There's a nod to a nostalgia of sort of when we were growing up, and, you know, it's called Land After Time, which is a nod to Land Before Time, which was sort of a popular thing back then. And but there was this sort of dark undertone to it, which had to do with what the artists were interested in. But beyond that, we sort of, you know, I co-curated it with Christina Papanikolaou, who runs the gallery, and we did a lot of research as far as, okay, like what would that be? What, sort of like culturally speaking, what would that cultural memory be? What would that look like? How would we describe that? And sort of looked into a lot of things that were happening in the 90s and things that might happen in the future, technology wise. Obviously, had conversations with the artists. Their practices were sort of steeped in that conversation too. And, you know, it's sort of, it's like a long-winded process. And then obviously once you get into the space, even after you've picked work and visited with the artist multiple times and the artist made a lot of work for the show too, then you have to arrange it and place it. And that's, I think, that's the more intuitive part for me in the curatorial process anyway, is sort of getting into the space and responding to that space and, you know, hanging it and placing the work and creating a visual narrative.
And you're here in Southern Oregon putting together a show of faculty work for Southern Oregon University. This is a very different part of the country than, say, working out of Tribeca in New York or in London. Have you had time to reflect on how to actually connect audiences outside of the university bubble with the work that you're doing? Like, why should people, say, listening to this radio program, care what contemporary artists are doing?
Well, I mean, ideally, people are culturally invested in what's happening, not just on a national level, not just on a local level, but I guess on an international level. And I mean, ideally, for instance, with this show, you know, you are interested on a local level, you're interested in what the local university's faculty has been up to. There's, you know, that's sort of like an investment in the educational system within the university. And yeah, just sort of knowing what's happening, I suppose, with artists in your area. But then, you know, on a national level, I think it's important to for people to see what's happening around the country when it comes to artists and what they're making. And like, for instance, I noticed that a lot of the work here is very environmentally minded, which, you know, you see in New York, absolutely. But it's obviously a prominent conversation here, probably on a different scale than, say, in New York City. So that's something that, I mean, I think can be really, you know, kind of engaging for the viewer and, you know, to think about. I mean, that affects people, you know, everywhere.
Have you noticed a trend of artwork? And you certainly have a broad view of it coming all the way across the continent and then across the pond to London. Mm-hmm. Have you seen more environmentally minded work and in, say, the last 10 years?
I mean, I think obviously the conversation around global warming and the recent sort of neglect of that conversation via, you know, Trump and whatever. But yeah, I think it becomes a more and more kind of scary idea, and people talk about it more and more. And I think whatever the public is talking about more, it sort of seeps into what artists are making. I think a lot of work reflects the conversations that people have as citizens and people have with one another. And I mean, yeah, I see a lot of environmental work. Probably, I mean, it's hard to say over the past 10 years if there's been a huge rise in that because artists come and go, I suppose. But yeah, it's definitely out there. I don't know if there's a rise per se, but it's definitely there.
And I came across some wording on your website that talks about the artist as entrepreneurial model.
Yeah.
And that stuck out to me because I think a lot of us, we have this idea of the artist being totally separate from the economy of their work. Like, uh-huh. Artists shouldn't worry about buying and selling. That's someone else's job.
Yes.
What's your approach?
Well, the artist as entrepreneurial model is sort of a much deeper. It's sort of within the context of the future. it's a much more detailed sort of idea, I suppose. It's within the context of the creative economy, and it's within an economic framework. So sort of using the model as, or the artist as a model for the entrepreneurial sort of ideal moving forward, as
like entrepreneur as an innovator.
Yeah, sort of as an innovator and sort of wearing many hats and being really proactive and thinking creatively. I had written my dissertation in London about sort of artist hybrid roles such as artist curator, artist critic, etc., and how that's become more prominent, and how the artist as the role of the artist evolves, because a lot of artists practice across many different disciplines, artist educators, for example, artist critics, artist curators, et cetera, and how I think that will probably develop, and within the future economic sort of situation, who knows, that may change now that Trump, I wrote this, you know, in 2014, that may change now, but originally it was sort of going towards a more creative economy, and things like creativity would be more valued with more and more outsourcing, which may change, automation, et cetera. You know, I'm talking 15, 20 years ahead. So it's sort of, projections, I suppose, and using the artist as a model for that.
Right. And with threats to pull funding for the National Endowment of the Arts and many other public sources of patronage for the arts, we'll see what happens. We've been talking with Kelly Werman. She is a curator working out of Southern Oregon University for how long have you been working here, Kelly?
Well, I came here for a week in, I think it was November, to do studio visits, and I've been here since Monday night, so.
And you, but you visited in 2014, was it?
Oh, no.
At a residency?
Oh, no, no, no. Yeah. No, I mean, I just mentioned that I'd written a paper in London at 2014, but.
Okay.
Yeah, it's only my second time here.
And the exhibit tonight is called Shapes of Curiosity. It's a creative arts faculty exhibition. It features a lot of folks, and it opens at 5 p.m. here in Ashland at the Schneider Museum of Art. Shapes of Curiosity, where did that title come from? What's the idea behind the show?
Well, Shapes of Curiosity is the campus-wide theme. So Scott had sort of, you know, mentioned that, and I sort of thought, okay, that's actually a really great place to start when it comes to the exhibition, because obviously curiosity goes hand in hand with learning, and also, you know, any great artist and great educator, an insatiable curiosity is a huge part of what drives them. And obviously shapes could correlate to different formal qualities in the work, different media, et cetera. So it's sort of a nice way, I think, to tie together an exhibition where people have very different practices, but are also artist educators.
And when you talk about curiosity and going back to this idea of the artist as entrepreneur, does money really relate to that? I guess I didn't get a clear picture of how money ties into this idea of the entrepreneur as an innovator or an artist or even a scientist, a creator. But what is, especially now that we are looking at less public support for the arts, how can people respond to the economic imperatives and still make their work the way they want to make it?
I suppose for some artists, money is a driver, and for some artists, it's not. I think for most artists, it's definitely not the most important thing. You want to stay true to your practice, and hopefully that isn't driven by commercial ideas. But as far as the entrepreneurial model, that's sort of more a theoretical model rather than the artist practicing now as an entrepreneur. I think that artists do wear many hats. And with, you know, the sort of globalization of information and with social media and everything, you know, you can reach people across the globe now so easily. You can find online communities, et cetera. that more artists are promoting their own work and sort of doing it on their own without a gallery. And it's very easy to do that now with Instagram. I mean, I've sold paintings on Instagram. I know all the artists I know have sold paintings off of Instagram.
Wow.
And yeah, so it's like, you know, it's very, I suppose really what it's about when I say entrepreneurial model is the idea of being proactive and taking over your own career, which for a long time was not the way it was done. You know, for a long time, an artist would work with a gallery and everyone wanted a gallery because they would take care of them. And back in the day, artists would pay for their studios and their supplies and, you know, basically like pay them a salary. And that's not the case anymore. And things are, you know, things have changed. And with the internet and social media, it's very easy to sort of take control of your own career in that way. So I guess it's up to, if you do go that route, it's up to the artist how much you want your work to be driven by money, so to speak.
Well, a lot of changes in store for our country and for the contemporary art scene. Kelly Werman is a curator and an artist. Shapes of Curiosity opens at the Schneider Museum tonight, 5 p.m. The exhibit will stay open through Saturday, March 11th. So that's at Southern Oregon University. You can find details on our website, jeffexchange.org. Kelly, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.